creating cultural awareness and understanding. This is Culture Click. Culture Click is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University.
Would fewer guns create a safer society? Welcome to part two of the Warrior Debate on Gun Control on this episode of Culture Click. The debate will present arguments for and against the motion and will give audience members a chance to vote before and after the debate on their view of the motion. I'm Bill Stoneberg, and this is the Warrior Debate on Gun Control on Culture Click.
I understand that we have a question from one of our online viewers.
Yes, we have two questions coming from our Skype viewers. The first one is, do you think it's a good idea to raise the age to purchase a firearm from 18 to 21?
Well, since we gave the four side the first crack at the first question, why don't you begin with that question?
I believe that it would be beneficial. However, I do not think that it is something that is necessary. We allow those the age of 18 to enroll in the Army. I believe that if we think that they have enough responsibility to do something like that, then they are capable of using a gun safely.
On the for side, any other contributions?
I think it would certainly help. It certainly helped in the Parkland case where the shooter was, I think, 19 years old. And if that law would have been in place, he obviously couldn't have bought this gun. Now, I do think that that's not an end-all solution. You can't just enact that and say, oh, we solved the problem. But I do see how it would reduce the number in certain instances. But that would not be at the top of my priority list if I was going to make a list of policies I wanted to enact.
Interesting answers. Any other further thoughts from either side?
Yeah. So we allow people at 16 and above, often 15 and above, to drive cars. We see, let's see here, in terms of deaths by vehicle accidents, we are looking at 60,000 as compared to 11,000. If you choose to take away weapons from a person of 18 and move that up to 21, you may as well make it illegal for a person to drive until they're 21. And with that, I'll rest.
Connor, any final words?
I think one of the problems is statistically comparing a numerical value of deaths to another numerical value of deaths. While there is some legitimacy, I believe, in You can derive some comparatives between those numbers. For instance, yeah, there could be an argument that, yes, maybe driving a car at age 16 or something may not be something that's safe for society. But at the same time, these are still 11,000 people who die each year. And going back to the initial question, you know, it could be something that would help, especially in the case of Parkland. But at the same time, I don't think it would go far enough. I don't think it would help enough for what is actually needed. That I rest.
Thank you very much. Now, we do have more questions from online, but first I'm curious if anyone else in the room who's physically present would like to ask a question. Yes, in the back, go ahead.
Yeah. I would like to expand on the effect that the mental health of the Parkland shooter had on the incident and the responsibility of those around him to stop him from doing so. I would first like to present if it's actually true that people suffering from mental health issues are often the victim of crime rather than the perpetrator of crime. And then secondly, with this in mind, how would educational efforts, as Ishmael mentioned earlier, in relationship to mental health curb gun violence in the United States?
Mm. Well, let's begin with the force side. How would you respond to that?
So the problem is with that is that there's not a lot of good evidence either way, because the studies have been paltry and have been inconsistent because of the lack of funding to the CDC. And so, regarding the issue of mental health, I do think there should be universal mental health care. So if someone really wants or is in really desperate need of mental health, they can go and get the mental care that they need. And then that way, I would imagine you would see a reduction in these rare instances where you have mentally ill people going around and shooting people, even though a majority of the time they are not the perpetrators, like you said, of violence. They are the victims of it.
Thank you, Cole.
I would like to say first that without knowing the exact numbers, it's hard to make complete, you know, strong claims about what effect education would have on the problem. However, I believe that education is a very good place to start when it comes to this issue. It is the place where, you know, the majority of Americans, if not all Americans, begin their journey through life, and it's where they learn a lot of their values. So I think that that's certainly a good place to start, regardless of the exact magnitude of impact it would have on the issue.
Cool. Any response?
I see, going back to the question, I see education is often used as this is a cure for every problem in our society. And yes, education is very important. It helps, you know, it helps give us civic values, it helps create our moral structure, stuff that are very important to our society as a whole. But at the same time, education isn't necessarily the entire solution to gun violence. Gun violence, like you said, victims of gun violence normally are those who suffer from mental health. People who suffer from mental health are normally victims, they aren't the perpetrators. There's a stigma that those who have mental health issues are automatically violent and that they are the ones who commit crimes. It should not be up to the family or the people around them to analyze that and try and fix their mental health issues. It should be up to our government to help those people, and it should be up to our government to restrict those people from having guns set so they do not commit these atrocities.
Remington?
Okay, I would first like to respond to the you're saying it's our government's responsibility. So the Second Amendment states specifically that it's the right of a person to maintain a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, and the right of the people to bear arms shall not be infringed. If you give the onus to the government to protect all of us, you've now removed our ability to protect ourselves. And I would also like to just look at, I completely agree with your mental health being more victim than murderer. It's shown actually multiple times that anger and opportunity are greater motive for murder by gun than mental health is, which makes me think that actually attacking mental health would not be as effective as looking at something more like gang violence, which accounts for 80% of gun homicides. And I'd also like to point out the fact that 3% of the guns used in homicide were legally owned to begin with. So if you're looking at just in general gun violence, you have to understand the fact that most of the guns used in crime are not used by legal owners to begin with. And with that, I rest.
Thank you very much, Remington. Now let's move to another question from one of our online viewers.
Thank you. Cole, could we get source material on the statistics you gave on Americans in favor of increased background checks and so on?
Sure. The source on that was Quinnipiac, which is one of the gold standards for polling. They are based out in Connecticut. So that's where I got the source from.
I'll testify to that. I had the same statistic.
Well, okay, that was an easy question. Thank you very much to our online viewers for that one. Now, I saw many more hands in the studio audience. Would anyone else like to go ahead? And the cube is being handed to you right there.
Okay. So the against side has mentioned, like, constitutional rights and employment rates and stuff. And, multiple times, the foresight hasn't really addressed this. So gun rights is a multi-dimensional issue, and it's not just mass killings that we're talking about. We're also talking about the employment that is given via guns and also constitutional rights. So
sure.
Can you address that?
Sure, the issue of constitutional rights, it's important. So in the landmark District of Columbia versus Heller case from 2008, which was the first time the Supreme Court had ruled on the Second Amendment in almost 70 years. The conservative majority opinion was written by Scalia, and he found that there is an individual right to bear arms in the United States. But that right, like every other right, is not unlimited, and nothing in that opinion should be taken to cast doubt on the idea that you can prohibit the firearm possession by mentally ill people, by domestic abusers, by felons. There's no doubt that it would not be unconstitutional if you had a law that said you can't carry a gun into a government building or a school, and it would not be unconstitutional to impose certain conditions and qualifications on the commercial sale of guns. So a lot of people tend to believe erroneously that the Second Amendment is unlimited, but just like every other amendment in the Constitution, it is not. And there have been cases where a majority of the gun control legislation that was put forward by the states in the aftermath of Heller was upheld by the courts, the lower courts. It is also worth noting in the 8 years since McDonald versus Chicago, which is another gun rights case, there have not been any gun control laws contested up to the Supreme Court level.
Thank you very much, Cole. Any response?
I can go first if you'd like. So I would go along with the fact that 90% of people support the idea of a universal background check. And in many states, background checks are legally required for you to purchase a firearm. For example, in Hawaii, it's slightly more difficult to purchase a firearm in Hawaii due to the fact that they do require background checks. They require that step in every single case for every seller, private or public. They experience the lowest homicide rates by guns in any state in the US. But I would also state that the idea of a freedom being limited when it's classified as a freedom does not make it a freedom. And I will rest at that.
In the interest of taking two more questions, let's move on from there. By my reckoning, we have just enough time for two more. Are there any questions from the online format?
Please. Coming from a Skype question, does gun ownership have a direct relationship with homicide rates? Statistics from countries such as Russia and Mexico point out that America has a much higher rate of gun ownership, but a much lower homicide rate.
Well, this seems like it's targeted at the against side, so why don't we let you start?
I think that it that is a very good point, that Iceland and Germany are good examples. Respectively, Iceland has 30%, Iceland, respectively, in regards to Iceland and Germany, they have 30 and 32% the amount of guns per capita as the US. However, when it comes to gun violence, they have 1% and 0% the amount of homicides committed per 100,000 people. So it seems to imply that there are many other aspects to this issue aside from just the number of guns. There's a factor that is great enough to decrease a number from 30% to 0%.
Thank you, Ishmael. Any response?
Just to go back with what you said, Germany and Iceland, yes, do have high gun ownership rates. You know, they're not as high as U.S. gun ownership rates, and they do have relatively low levels of fatalities, that is true. But at the same time, they are also limited to certain types of firearms. They have very stringent regulations. They have strong waiting periods. So wouldn't that be a various forms of gun control that the United States lacks? I believe that's an open-ended question, I suppose.
Interesting comments, yeah. And we have time for one more question from the studio audience. Please, go ahead.
Yes. I wanted to go back to the number of mass shootings since I can't remember the date. You said
1982.
Do you have the number of mass shootings, or more to the point, school shootings, prior to the 1990 Gun Safe, the Gun Free Zone Act? How many school shootings have existed since schools have been gun free zones versus how many school shootings there have been prior to the Gun Free Zone Act?
Let's begin on the foresight.
We do not have access to that information.
All right then.
Okay, so I do know a little bit about the gun-free zone. The first gun-free zone was actually enacted in Kansas about 20 years after the foundation of the Constitution. And it promptly failed. They put up a gun-free zone and people shot the sign. That was the first occurrence. Since then, and actually the 1980s was the pinnacle of gun violence in the United States due to crack cocaine abuse. So as we saw those numbers decline, we saw the number of deaths decline. And as we saw the gun-free zone in schools, we saw fewer deaths as well. And I'll rest at that.
further comments. All right, fantastic. Well, thank you all very much for your questions and your responses. We're now going to take 1 minute and allow our panelists to think about their final comments. While they're thinking about this and planning this out, I have a number of thanks, some of which I want to reiterate and some I want to make anew. First off, I cannot thank enough everyone at Teaching, Learning, and Technology who has worked to make this possible, especially making it possible for us to beam this out to all of your respective internet-enabled devices at home and otherwise. I also want to thank everyone at Student Life and Development for their ongoing role with these warrior debates in terms of creating them, coming up with the idea, and advertising them, and asking us to get involved too. On the topic of asking us to get involved, I once again want to note that 3 out of the 4 panelists are members of our philosophy club here at Winona State. And this is my shameless plug for it, as I am the advisor of the philosophy club, the faculty advisor. If you enjoy hearing what these intrepid individuals had to say about gun control and wish that you yourself could sit in a room and argue with them sometime, you should consider coming out to Philosophy Club, which takes place on Thursday nights at 6 p.m. in Minet Hall on the top floor. You should be able to find us quite easily. One final thanks. Thank you to all of you for coming out tonight, for being here, and thank you everyone for tuning in who's watching from home, or again, elsewhere on your phones. And I really want to thank everyone who asked questions tonight. These were fantastic questions that allowed us to explore this important, timely, and contentious issue. Now, without any further ado, we're going to transition to our 4 final statements, if the panelists are prepared. Okay, and we are going to begin with the against side.
I would like to wrap this up by reiterating some of what I believe to be our strongest points. One of the most important things to know in this topic, with, again, it being very colored by the media, that mass shootings make up a very, very small percentage of the actual gun violence that is enacted in the USA. A much larger percentage belongs to gang violence, specifically, 95% to be exact. What this means is that no matter what the government tries to do to control illegal weapons, they can only have an effect on legal weapons. Therefore, we must look at other options for combating this issue, such as education, or perhaps we can look at changing our culture through other means, such as social media, or even simply
not consuming Tide Pods.
That would probably help.
Not consuming Tide Pods, in case you didn't catch that, by the way, it was Remington's comment. Thank you very much for your closing comments, Ishmael. Now we'll go to the 4 side for one of your closing comments.
All right, so I guess in my closing comments, I'd just like to reiterate two very important points that were brought up by the against side that I believe that should be countered and looked at very carefully. The first would be the Second Amendment and whether or not the freedoms associated with the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment is a freedom. We do have the right to bear arms. There's no dispute about that. But it's a freedom that's limited. Just like the freedom of speech, the freedom of speech is limited. You cannot yell fire in a crowded building. That is illegal. You will face jail time or a fine or something of that sort. That is controlled. Just as the Second Amendment should be controlled as well in cases where gun violence is an epidemic, that happens continually. The amount of deaths associated with gun violence and the technology and development of guns was something that our founding fathers could not have even conceived. They wrote the Constitution in 1789. We are living in the year 2018. To say that this is something that cannot be limited because it was written down is foolish in of itself, because any other freedom that we have is limited. Furthermore, I'd also like to talk about comparing other countries, for instance, Australia, after its mass shooting, I believe, in the 1990s. They basically had an overhaul of gun control. They banned assault weapons. They banned many types of even rifles. They banned like they created huge waiting periods, stuff of that sort. Australia has not seen a mass shooting since. Their homicide rate due to gun violence has dropped dramatically. In taking countries like Germany or Switzerland or Iceland, if you want, where they have high levels of gun ownership rate with low gun violence mortality rates or just gun violence rate, it's important to look at what type of guns they own as well. They own guns that are primarily used for hunting or for self-defense in areas like the wilderness against animals and wildlife. These aren't people who are using guns for fun. These aren't people who are using guns for sport, like shooting ranges, and these aren't people who need semi-automatic rifles. They're rifles for protecting themselves against wildlife or stuff of that sort.
Thank you very much, Connor. And now back to the against side for Remington's closing statements.
Okay, so I'd like to just address a few things. You mentioned guns as an epidemic. And I would just like to point out that the CDC defines an epidemic as 7.37% of deaths in a given population. Guns do not represent that percent. Like I said, gun homicides represent 0.01% of the deaths given. And if we look at kind of going just around a couple of your points, Australia, they banned guns in the 90s. And there are kind of conflicting statistics on this, actually, because they come from varying locations. So there are some statistics that say that their gun violence dropped dramatically. And then there are some that say, actually, that after they banned guns, their rate of gun homicides went up by 30%. So I would just like to double check. And then I also want to point out, you mentioned that people in Switzerland or in Iceland and Germany aren't hunting. And I would like to directly contradict that point. Recreational use for firearms in Switzerland is a national holiday. Actually, if you want to look that up, you can. And then just to kind of reiterate some other things, like I said, the $32 billion industry, that is the firearm industry, the employment of 301,000 people yearly as their main source of income, and the fact that the Second Amendment, just like all other amendments in the United States, are stated to be true as our freedoms. We are given that as a, I'm not religious, but as a God-given right. That's something outside the government, and that's something that the government is not permitted to take away from us. And I would also like to close by saying that 95% of the guns used in crime are illegally owned. And I will close with that.
Thank you very much, Remington. And for the final comment of the night, final closing remark, Cole Laniello.
According to the Harvard School of Public Health's Injury Control Center, they've found consistently that when you account for other variables, socioeconomic variables such as crime, places that have more guns have more death, it's a fact. And within the United States, there's evidence that suggests more guns in a community leads directly to more homicide. But it's important to note, as they've mentioned multiple times, that this is not a catch-all issue. This is not an issue where guns is the only thing we have to worry about. You have to worry about poverty, you have to worry about urbanization and the fact that there's really poor inner cities and really rich suburbs, and there's not a lot of interaction there between people. You have to worry about the rate of alcohol consumption. When that goes up, more people are more likely to be reckless and violent. And all that being said, it is still important to realize that there are roughly as many guns as there are Americans in this country. And if we want to be a country like Switzerland that has a lot of guns, we're going to have to find a way to deal with deal with the consistent mass slaughter that is happening. And it's important to take a holistic view of that and not say that this one policy will be the silver bullet. And so things like access to job programs and healthcare and poverty alleviation and all types of other social policies would probably help alleviate the gun violence problem even more than taking away certain types of guns like assault rifles.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Cole, and thank you once again to our four panelists for your excellent and engaging commentary on both sides of this important issue. Now, one of the goals of a debate, not the only goal perhaps, but one of the goals is to persuade your audience. To that end, we polled you here in the audience with us today before the debate began, and now we're going to poll you again. So if I recall correctly, hold up the side with an A for agree, B for disagree, and was there something for undecided too? What was that?
C for undecided.
C for undecided. So go ahead, and now we're going to use our extremely fascinating technology to scan the audience and see what you are holding up. Okay, there we go. Going across the audience. Perhaps I should do some kind of drum roll. Do y'all want to join me? No, I'll give it a minute. I don't want to disrupt anything. It looks like the results are being tallied. All right, now's a good time for the drum roll. Okay. At the beginning of the debate, 10% said that they were undecided. 43% said that they agreed with the proposition, and 48% said that they disagree. The disagree side now has 52%, meaning they have gone up. 35% agree, and 13% are undecided, meaning more people are now undecided and more people now disagree with this motion than before. Now, in many of these debates, the moderator declares a winner on the basis of this information. But in my estimation, tonight was not about winning or losing this debate. Tonight was about modeling and participating in the exact kind of dialogue that we need to have nationwide about this particular issue. We have seen Cole, Connor, Ishmael, and Remington explore all the nuances, all the questions, and all the wide variety of facts on both sides of this. I think they've done an absolutely fantastic job, and I'd like to ask all of you to join me in thanking them with a round of applause. And on that note, I'd like to ask all of you to continue joining us for our future Warrior debates and ask you to have a good evening. Good night. Thanks again.
Thanks to the panelists, Student Life and Development, Teaching, Learning, and Technology Services, Denise McDowell, and everyone who makes the Warrior Debate possible. I'm Bill Stoneberg, and you've been listening to Culture Click.
Creating cultural awareness and understanding. You've been listening to Culture Click. Support for Culture Click is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Culture Click is produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. For more information, look us up on the web at kqal.org. And thanks for listening to Culture Click.